For some, poison ivy is a nuisance or even an enemy. About 80% of us are allergic to its toxic oils. But for others, it's fascinating, too. Mason Heberling is Associate Curator of Botany at the Carnegie Museum of Natural History in Pittsburgh.
It's a really interesting plant for a variety of reasons. So I oftentimes pull out old poison ivy specimens for tours around here because it's a plant that people, whether they like it or not, can relate to.
A new study uses museum specimens to find out how the leaves of poison ivy in Pennsylvania have changed with the increased carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that's fueling climate change.
In our study, we looked at poison ivy, toxicodendron. I will just pull a bunch of specimens for us to look at.
Heberling pulls a stack of folders out of a cabinet with a green Mr. Yuck sticker on it. The museum's herbarium has 133 dried poison ivy specimens from Pennsylvania, dating from 1838 to the 2010s.
This one's really cool. It's from June 1884, 18th Ward, Pittsburgh, collected by John Schaefer. It's super old.
Some are red, others have white berries, but they all have those infamous leaves of three. Heberling says he doesn't know if you can get a rash from touching the leaves or stems of the specimens, because they never do. He says the new study using these specimens was pioneered by then Chatham University undergraduate Alyssa McCormick, a research intern. It's based on a pair of influential studies from the early 2000s, one where poison ivy was grown indoors with high and regular carbon dioxide levels, and another where a forest plot was artificially enriched with carbon dioxide. The study showed poison ivy could be a winner when it comes to climate change, growing larger leaves with more CO2 and becoming more toxic to people. But those were experimental studies. Heberling and McCormick wondered about an observational one.
We kind of stared at the specimens for a really long time to kind of think, what can we measure from them?
They measured stomatal density, or the number of stomata, or pores, on the leaves, which are how plants take in carbon dioxide for photosynthesis and release oxygen and water.
And so we do that in this really fancy way. You put a little bit of nail polish on the dried leaf, let the nail polish dry on the leaf, and then you can pull off the nail polish, and it makes kind of a cast of the underside of the leaf without damaging the specimen.
Heberling says the amount of stomata that some plant species make correlates with carbon dioxide. So they wanted to know if poison ivy adjusted its stomatal density with more carbon dioxide. And they had another question.
Do all plants do this, or is this a special poison ivy thing?
So they looked at another woody vine, Virginia creeper, and staghorn sumac and poison sumac, both related to poison ivy, but trees, not vines. They also looked at leaf size and sent small samples of the leaves away for analysis to measure different forms of carbon in them. The earliest specimens in the study are from around 1840, when atmospheric carbon dioxide was about 280 parts per million.
And today we're well over 400. That's a pretty big increase in carbon dioxide over the last 200 plus years.
They found that unlike the two tree species, poison ivy and Virginia creeper decreased their stomatal density with increased carbon dioxide over the last 200 years, which means that per unit area, fewer stomata are present. But the leaves of the vines tended to be larger, as in the previous studies. So if the leaf area is larger without increasing the number of pores, the plants might benefit from increased light capture for photosynthesis without losing as much water. But they don't really know. Heberling says a big takeaway from the study is that poison ivy does seem to be doing better with climate change, and specifically more CO2 in the atmosphere, but so are other vines.
I hear a lot of people talking about vines taking over their yard, not only poison ivy, but other, you know, wild grapes and other things. And so this study also kind of lends to that, that there is definitely a carbon dioxide enrichment story here in vines.
So you mentioned that the leaves might be bigger and that overall, poison ivy might be doing better today than it was 100 years ago. What are the ecological implications of poison ivy on steroids?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, there is a lot of conversation among plant ecologists of increases in woody vines and what that might mean for like forest regeneration, for instance. So not only poison ivy, but other woody vines also. If we expect them to be increasing with increased carbon dioxide at a new level, it could change the kind of the composition of the forest, right? And could potentially affect forest regeneration, meaning they may be kind of suppressing saplings from reaching the canopy, and then you may have a more open like forest compared to with fewer vines.
What's the significance of using the herbarium collection for studies like these?
I mean, we can do all kinds of short-term experimental studies that are really sophisticated and wonderful and tell us a lot about the biology and our changing environment. But these specimens are kind of an archive of a baseline, right? So we can do a short-term study. And by short-term, I mean could be a year, could be even 10 or 20 years. But here we have leaves that were collected, you know, almost 200 years ago. So we have this really long trajectory.
Heberling says it highlights the differences between what can be observed in the real world versus what can be learned in a lab or controlled setting. Though he says there are some issues to consider when using these historic specimens, like they don't know the exact locations or growing conditions where many of the leaves were collected. The museum study also didn't measure poison ivy's toxicity, the production of the oily urushiol that gives many of us an itchy rash. But Heberling says more studies using the herbarium collection are in the works. The new CO2 study is published in the September issue of the peer-reviewed American Journal of Botany. There's more, including photographs of the specimens, at alleghenyfront.org. You're listening to The Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holzapfel.